It's Wednesday, January 22nd. I'm Oscar Ramirez in Los Angeles, and this is The Daily Dive. The CDC has reported that the first case of the Chinese coronavirus outbreak has hit the U.S. The man infected is from Washington State, and the CDC confirmed that he had it with a genetic test. The virus is zoonotic, which means it can be transmitted from animals to humans, but it can also be passed between humans. Dan Vergano, science reporter for BuzzFeed News, joins us for what we know about coronavirus. Next, there's a campaign to redefine something called Chinese restaurant syndrome. It is an entry in the Merriam-Webster dictionary that describes symptoms of numbness, dizziness, and palpitations affecting people who eat Chinese food with MSG. Activists say that this definition and stigma surrounding MSG are unfounded and rooted in racism. Amelia Nierenberg, food reporter for the New York Times, joins us for the campaign to redefine CRS. Finally, West Coast transplants are starting to ruin the small-town vibes of places like Boise and Star, Idaho. Many people are coming to these small towns for the slower pace of life and cheaper housing costs. But as they come in droves, they are bringing the same problems they were trying to escape with them. Dan Frosch, reporter for the Wall Street Journal, joins us for how managing growth is the big problem facing these small towns. It's news without the noise. Let's dive in.
We don't actually know how infectious that is, and typically it takes months and hundreds of people being sick before doctors actually get a good grasp on just how infectious it is. That's the big question. How dangerous is this new virus, and how easily does it infect people from person to person?
Joining us now is Dan Vergano, science reporter at BuzzFeed News. Thanks for joining us, Dan.
Happy to do it.
You know, everybody is very concerned with what we're hearing about this coronavirus coming out of China. People just aren't sure what it is exactly, how much we should be worried about it, how is it spreading, all that. Let's start off with the latest news, because federal health officials just announced that the first U.S. case of the Chinese coronavirus has made its way here. What do we know about that? This was happening in Washington State.
Well, it's an interesting case. A man came from Wuhan, China, which is the epicenter of the outbreak, around January 15th and didn't have symptoms. And he arrived in the U.S. and then the indirect flight arrived in Seattle. The next day, he feels sick. He goes to his doctor. He apparently had researched the disease himself and put two and two together and brought it to his doctor's attention. Doctor alerted the authorities very quickly, public health officials in Washington State who had been sort of worried about this. The CDC has been telling them to look out, isolated him, and sent off a sample to test. The CDC has very quickly produced a genetic test to confirm the illness and said, yay, verily, he has it. And he was transported to a hospital in Everett, Washington, where he's in medical isolation.
One of the concerns about all of this is how this is spreading. So obviously, right now, it's Lunar New Year time. Officials are worried about a lot of travel from people in China traveling for the holiday and all that. And this is how things get spread around. And unfortunately, what is happening is they're doing a lot of checks at airports, people coming from the area. But with this case in particular, this man in Washington, he came back into the United States right before they started doing these tests at airports. So the worrisome part of it is we don't know who he was in contact with in those few days. And maybe he didn't have a lot of symptoms, but we don't know if it was transmissible at that time yet.
We don't actually know how infectious that is. And typically it takes months and hundreds of people being sick before doctors actually get a good grasp on just how infectious it is. That's the big question. How dangerous is this new virus, and how easily does it infect people from person to person? The fact that he didn't have symptoms meant that he likely would have gotten past the screening that we have in place, because that's what they're looking for, are the pneumonia-like symptoms of this virus.
So let's talk about the virus a little more in depth now. The most interesting thing about this is that it is a zoonotic virus, which means it can be transmitted from animals to humans. And now we're learning it could be transmitted from humans to humans also. But tell us what kind of symptoms and what other illnesses this coronavirus might resemble.
It's a classic pneumonia. The symptoms seem to be similar to any other virus that you would get that would cause congestion, trouble breathing, stuffed up nasal passages, the whole deal. It's just that the origin is so peculiar, as you say. A lot of our viruses are thought to have had an animal origin at some point. You know, people domesticating animals, you know, tens of thousands of years ago probably led to a whole lot of viruses jumping from animals to people. And then they mutate a little bit and they can go from person to person. And this is what we have here. It's just that it's a new one. And the fact is the whole human species is pretty much naive to it in an immune sense, means that it could spread like wildfire, the way that Zika spread in the Americas a few years ago, where the whole population in South America was naive to it. So that's the worry there. It gets out, population doesn't have any immune system protection, and off we go. And it does seem to be dangerous to the elderly at the very least, and it's killed 6 people already in China, mostly the elderly. And so, you know, that's the worry, is something like this gets out of the bottle and dangerous to a lot of people.
And about 300 cases have been identified of this coronavirus. So that's kind of the thing that people are comparing it to, you know, possibly SARS or MERS, but it doesn't seem to be as strong as those, let's say, you know, and you're talking about how the symptoms are very common. The only way to treat it right now is kind of with those common treatments too. Pain medication, fever medicines, drink plenty of liquids. You know, it sounds like everybody's making such a big deal of it, but the way to treat it is so simple.
Right now, at least, it's not Ebola. But the deal is that viruses like this, they mutate. So it's already had to mutate to become transmissible from person to person. It jumped from an animal to a person, and then in recombining, it must have mutated. These viruses are kind of sloppy guys. They get into cells, and they mix up their genes, and out comes something a little bit new. And the worry is you get something more dangerous that is very transmissible in this situation where it suddenly has 7 billion new bodies to do its chemistry in.
Right. What else? Did the CDC say anything other than making the announcement of the man in Washington? Or did they signal any next steps?
They announced that they were going to include screening, expanded rather, to Atlanta and Chicago, and that they were going to start funneling flights or travelers from elsewhere who were taking indirect flights into the country that were starting out in Wuhan through the 5 airports, New York, LAX, San Francisco, and now Atlanta and Chicago, through those points for screening. So, you know, if you landed in Vancouver and then we're going to take a short flight somewhere else from Wuhan, that you're going to be removed from your plane and, you know, given a new ticket to go to an airport where you can be screened. And the hope is that they have this genetic test now that they're going to spread worldwide, that you can do a rapid assessment of whether or not you have the disease or not, and they can screen a whole lot more people more quickly.
Dan Vergano, science reporter at BuzzFeed News, thank you very much for joining us.
You bet.
Chinese restaurant syndrome, noun.
A group of symptoms such as numbness of the neck, arms, and back.
With headache, dizziness, and palpitations that is held to affect susceptible persons eating food, and especially Chinese food.
Heavily seasoned with monosodium glutamate, MSG.
MSG.
Joining us now is Amelia Nierenberg, food reporter for the New York Times. Thanks for joining us, Amelia.
Thanks for having me.
There is a campaign right now to redefine something called Chinese restaurant syndrome, and MSG, monosodium glutamate, plays a big part in this. And I never knew that this was an actual entry in the Merriam-Webster dictionary. I'm going to just read it first, and then we'll get into the larger discussion. But Chinese restaurant syndrome is defined as a group of symptoms such as numbness of the neck, arms, and back with headache, dizziness, and palpitations that is held to affect susceptible persons eating food, and especially Chinese food, heavily seasoned with monosodium glutamate, MSG. So right now there's this campaign to redefine this. There's been a ton of studies that really say, you know, MSG is not particularly unhealthy for you, and it really doesn't contribute to any of this. So Amelia, tell us what's going on behind this campaign and how this all started.
So the idea of Chinese restaurant syndrome started when a physician, Dr. Homan Kwok, wrote to the New England Journal of Medicine in 1968, because whenever he ate Chinese food, he claimed, he didn't feel so good. He wrote about all of the things you just described, numbness, headache, palpitations, etc. And then shortly thereafter, a bunch more people wrote in, and this idea of Chinese food makes you sick was born. Since then, the Japanese company Ajinomoto, which is the leading producer of MSG since a Japanese scientist, they have funded. There have been lots of other studies. Maybe it's not so good for you in huge doses, but there's been no conclusive scientific evidence. So this campaign, which was conceived by Ajinomoto, involves Eddie Huang and Jeannie Mai, who are two television stars and writers and personalities and chefs. And it's hashtag #RedefineCRS because they think that this definition is racist.
They also go on to allege that for generations in Americans' minds, maybe Chinese food to a lesser degree, but really MSG was so bad for you. And I totally am guilty of that also. I just remember hearing that when you grow up and you think about it.
And, oh, for sure.
And you see all these Chinese food places that say, oh, no MSG here and all that stuff, just so you would want to go back. Right. And it goes both ways. There's people that even enjoy it or say, oh, well, I don't want it unless it has that MSG in it, you know, jokingly. But it just really created this whole thing in a lot of people's heads to kind of want to stay away for this. And there have been a lot of studies that concluded that MSG isn't necessarily bad for you. A lot of people think maybe if you're eating these foods or whatever, it could be sodium intake that could be the problem, and everybody responds differently. Right. But this is found in all sorts of stuff. Ranch dressing, it's found in ramen. McDonald's is going to put MSG in their upcoming fried chicken sandwich. So maybe people don't think of it, but it's not a hidden secret. People are using MSG constantly.
I know, have relatives, I have friends who say, MSG gives me a headache. And maybe it does. Some people are sensitive to salt. Some people don't like cinnamon. I'm not one to quibble with folks about what they do and do not want in their food. But food companies considered it a toxin after this physician wrote in the late 60s. And it's not. It's basically flavored salt.
MSG is found in foods like tomato and cheese. And people had to figure out how to extract it and ferment it. And now they put it in stews and chicken stocks and things like that. It really gives food this fifth taste of umami. It's just a complex flavor. Like you said, it's basically like a flavored salt, but it really got this stigma around it. So the call right now to redefine CRS is being made to Merriam-Webster. And how have they responded to this?
I had a wonderful email exchange with a senior editor at Merriam-Webster named Emily Brewster, and they hadn't had anyone write in about this definition until the campaign hit Twitter. And she spoke a lot in her email about how, as lexicographers, people who study words, the staff at Merriam-Webster and the editors at Merriam-Webster basically record and try and understand language as it is used. But this is a direct quote: "We do not create, sanction, or promote any specific words. The language's speakers do this, and we provide a record of this use." They don't delete entries unless they're like really out of date. One of the things that she told me they had removed was air tourist, which basically was someone flying on a plane but not in first class, used like 100 years ago or whatever. So no one's really saying that one's okay. But they do constantly define and redefine and reconsider words as society and culture and language itself changes.
Even if this campaign is successful and Merriam-Webster does change the definition or take it out, or, you know, whatever they do to react to this, to reflect what scientists have found out about MSG, that stigma really remains. Like we were saying, you know, generations of Americans have been led to believe all this stuff. And it's really going to take a lot more than just changing the word in the dictionary. I think celebrity chefs like David Chang and, you know, Anthony Bourdain, when he was still with us, have made comments about these things. And it's going to take a lot more. It's going to take restaurants and chefs to start using it again and change people's minds that way. So it's really still a long road ahead for this. But I know activists were saying this is a racist thing. You're blaming it on Chinese food when it's not really the case that way.
I think as a cuisine, just looking at it from a food writer's perspective, you know, a lot of the stereotype about Chinese food is that it's dirty or that it's dog. And that has been very quickly extended to Chinese people being dirty. And so you might say, oh, whatever, you know, MSG is just a salt, no one knows it. But it has real implications. There's almost nothing more intimate than eating, and there's almost nothing more potentially dangerous than putting food into your body. And so if you associate a group of people with something that you associate as dirty or dangerous, it's a very small gap between kind of extending that to the whole group. So although food is just food, it's also one of the most profound emblems of culture we have. And the things that people believe and the things that people say about food have a huge implication on the way that people treat each other.
Amelia Nierenberg, food reporter for the New York Times, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
It really is a double-edged sword. There are plenty of communities across the United States, I think, who would be envious of the kind of growth that a place like Star has experienced just in terms of jump-starting their economic engines. But in the case of Star, this is not a place where people have moved because they want to work.
Joining us now is Dan Frosch, reporter for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for joining us, Dan.
Glad to be here.
We're going to be talking about a small Idaho town called Star, Idaho. There's been a lot of migration from the West Coast to places like this. Specifically, Idaho is getting a lot of transplants from the West Coast. I think Idaho was the fastest growing state in the United States between July 2018 and July 2019. The Boise metro area is seeing a lot of growth there. And for a lot of people coming from California and these Western states, they're trying to escape extremely high home prices and then looking for that slower pace of life. But with all these people coming in, these small towns are starting to see that exact same thing that these people were all leaving. Dan, tell us a little bit about it.
You basically characterize it exactly right. You have places like Star, Idaho, which at one point were sort of small rural farming communities that were discovered by retirees from places like California who wanted to escape the stress of living in a big, densely populated state where there's a lot of traffic, home prices are high, and at some level trying to recreate the small towns that these retirees may have grown up in themselves. And so in the case of Star, this is a place that was really sort of off the grid to a certain extent, about 30 minutes west of Boise, very small farming, agricultural area. And really, in terms of the history of the city, overnight, it's just sort of exploded in growth and more than doubled in size. And as you can imagine, like any community which has seen that sort of growth, particularly with retirees and transplants coming in from the West Coast, there was a lot of discussion and consternation, I guess I would say, in terms of how this sort of community deals with the level of growth that they've seen.
Yeah, about 6 years ago, I think the town was about 6,000 people. Now it's over 10,000 people. And for these places themselves, it's kind of a double-edged sword. If it's a nice, quiet little town, now they're racked with rush hour traffic. But at the same time, you know, some of these businesses are really booming because there's so many people. So it's kind of this double-edged sword, and officials there are really racked with trying to figure out how to manage all of this growth.
It really is a double-edged sword. There are plenty of communities across the United States, I think, who would be envious of the kind of growth that a place like Star has experienced just in terms of jump-starting their economic engines. But in the case of Star, this is not a place where people have moved because they want to work, per se, right? They've moved here because they want to live out the rest of their lives in sort of a small, quiet community away from the more urban environments in which they've grown up. And that is obviously changing in a place like Star. So you are seeing rush hour traffic. You're seeing more chain stores moving in. You're seeing developments really sort of sprout up everywhere across this once empty farmland. And there's not a whole lot you can do about it. If you're a city official, you can try to sort of zone particular areas so you have more of a say in creating an identity for your town. But short of putting a moratorium on growth, which nobody wants to do in Star, save for a vocal minority, it's just a matter of trying to manage and control the growth as opposed to stopping it altogether.
And home prices, obviously, is always a big issue, especially on the West Coast. You hear these numbers and people would be kind of envious, but the median home price is about $400,000 right now, which for them, it's more than doubled. So that's a big jump for people there in Idaho. But over here on the West Coast, where people are trying to escape these home prices, they're like, man, I could totally afford that. But that's one of the other big things that they really have to control. And as you mentioned, you know, new developments. I know there's housing developments and things like that that they want to house the people there, maybe bring some prices down. But that's just one of the big hurdles that they have to tackle.
Obviously, compared to places on the West Coast, these medium home prices, $400,000, seem small. But for somebody who has moved to Star and bought a place for $200,000 with their sort of life savings, and their price of their home has gone up, and they're not looking to sell, they're just seeing their property taxes go up. And so this is not a place where people are going to sort of flip their homes or move on to sort of the next place. This is where they want to stay. And those property taxes and those home prices are only going to keep going because this is such a hot area to move to. Idaho has been either the fastest or close to the fastest growing state percentage-wise for some time now. And the Boise area is really attractive to a lot of people. And pretty much everybody you meet in this area has some connection to California. They're either from California, they lived in California at some point, or they moved directly from California to Boise. It's really sort of remarkable.
Dan Frosch, reporter for The Wall Street Journal, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
That's it for today. Join us on social media at Daily Dive Pod on both Twitter and Instagram. Leave us a comment, give us a rating, and tell us the stories that you're interested in. Follow us on iHeartRadio or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. This episode of The Daily Dive is produced by Victor Wright and engineered by Tony Sorrentino. I'm Oscar Ramirez, and this was your Daily Dive.